Welcome to the CCFR Radio Podcast, your source for news, updates, and stories from the CCFR.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 173 of the CCFR Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Rod Giltacka. Thanks for joining me again today. We've got a lot of information to cover. Wilson and I were at TACCOM 2024 from September the 6th through the 8th, and a lot went down there. We're going to tell you all about it. The NDP pulls out of their supply and support agreement with the Liberals, and the Bloc Québécois show up to eat the NDP's lunch. That's pretty interesting. We're going to cover that. And I've got an interview with Delinda Ryerson from the Sherwood Park Fish and Game Association in Sherwood Park, Alberta. And we're going to cover some interesting things. There's a reason why I've brought her on to chat. It should be good. Anyway, we've got a whole lot of stuff, all that and more. CCFR Radio starts right now. CTOMS has been a provider of trauma care training to military and police in Canada for nearly two decades. Now this emergency medical training is being made available to a wider audience through CTOMS online courses. Go to ctomsacademy.com and use promo code CCFR30 to get 30% off. That's ctomsacademy.com. And thank you so much to our great friends over at Vortex Canada. They continue to support the CCFR podcast and the CCFR. Can't say enough about them. Check out all their great products at vortexcanada.net. That's vortexcanada.net. Vortex, the force of optics. Need a new boomstick? Bullseye North is Canada's shooting superstore and a proud supporter of the CCFR. With a wide selection of guns and top trending gear for any shooter, they have what you need. Plus, free shipping over $250, which includes ammo, or flat rate shipping of $17 under $250. Some conditions apply. Subscribe to their weekly newsletter to get first access to the hottest deals. A huge thank you goes out to our great friends over at the Saskatchewan Rivers chapter of Safari Club International. They do a lot of great work over there, including supporting the CCFR and the CCFR Radio podcast. Check out all their great work at saskriversSCI.com. That's saskriversSCI.com. All right, we are back. So now I've got a series of things I want to run through really quickly with you, because Tracy and my talk was quite long because we had a lot of stuff to cover. And you'll hear all about that when I bring her on, but there's a lot of content in this episode. So I want to get through the stuff that I've got as quickly as possible. Now, number one, I just got back from TACCOM. So what you're seeing is segments that were recorded probably a week and a bit before you're watching them. And the reason for that is I had to record this episode early because I'm going hunting. So while you're watching this, I'm probably maybe just getting back from hunting, so that in the next episode, I'm hoping I have a really great hunting story for you and a successful story for you. So as I mentioned in the last episode, I'm going with Scott Carpenter of International Shooting Supplies. He's currently the president of the CCFR. Scott and I go back a ways. So Scott asked me, invited me up to go hunting with him. It's involving a 12-hour road trip each way. I'm not a road trip person. I can't stand to be in the car for more than, like, I don't know, an hour and 15 minutes, but I'm going to do it. Everything's going to be okay. Maybe I'll get like headphones and a blindfold and I'll just pretend I'm in my safe space. I'm in my happy place or whatever for the whole time, but I'll get through that. But I'm very excited to hopefully get an elk, a white-tailed deer, or a bear. I got tags for all three. And apparently elk is a very highly likely thing for me to get up in that area. That'll be Chetwin, British Columbia, I think is where I'm going. So very exciting. So I'll be able to share a story one way or another with you in the next episode. As I mentioned, Tracy and I were at TACCOM 2024 in Mississauga, Ontario, and it was phenomenal. It was really, really great. And big shout out to Fred Pellegrino and his brother and everyone over at Firearms Outlet Canada for putting together such a phenomenal show. You know, Fred, TACCOM was you know, Fred owns it, and it was his idea. And I remember the first one in 2019. The first one actually was at Firearms Outlet's facility in Ajax, Ontario. But that was sort of a proof of concept, which actually was a really awesome little show. It really was really cool. That one was kind of magical in itself on its own. But anyway, when Fred rolled out the real version, which was in 2019 at the International Center, It was awesome because it was this huge trade show. The stage was awesome. It was well lit and big, and it was really cool. And there were hospitality suites during that time. There was a big awards dinner. I think it was 800 people there. Like, it was really just beyond what anyone else would have been capable of doing. And Fred is, I'll tell you this, Fred supports the CCFR so well. I can't thank him enough for that. And boy, Fred does a good job of these things. He really knows how to take it the extra mile and exceed expectations. So, you know, I really appreciate that because I know how much work it is to do projects like that, right? So anyway, 2019 came out. It was phenomenal. It was magical, right? Because people still talk about it. And I still think about it from time to time. It was very similar to our Integrity March, where people are still talking about it 4 or 5 years later. And people were talking about the Integrity March at TACOM to me at the booth as well. I'm like, wasn't that a magical day? They're like, oh, it was unbelievable. Maybe we'll do another one someday. I don't know. There's got to be a reason for that, I guess. But anyway, right after 2019, TACOM took a hit, right? It was COVID, then gun bans, and then more gun bans, and then more legislation. It's just been taking hits. And it's been more difficult for vendors to come out. It's been difficult to justify financially some of this stuff. But I'll tell you, this was 2024. The place was packed. The community showed up. The community showed up, I think, to check the show out and all the rest of that stuff, to buy new guns, to do all the stuff that the community does, but with more enthusiasm than last year or the year before. I think the enthusiasm is back. People are optimistic. In fact, I did a speech about all the reasons to be optimistic as a gun owner right now. And I tell you, it was really great. And it was just great to look around and at the community and say, despite everything that has been done, despite everything they've done to us, we're still here. We're still standing. We took everything they had to throw at us and we're still standing and we're still fighting. It was really, really cool. Anyway, so that just happened. And so you're gonna hear a lot about TACOM and the conversations that we had and some of the things that happened while we were there. Next thing I wanna tell you about, not only will I hopefully have a great hunting story to tell you in the next episode, but I will also tell you about, I'll be releasing a new contest that we're running. This one is unlike anything we've done before. The prize isn't like a trip around the world or anything, but it's a really niche, meaningful prize. It's pretty cool. So I'm really excited to share that with you. And so we'll be running that, that contest from the next podcast to be drawn on Remembrance Day, on or about Remembrance Day. So it's going to be pretty neat. What else? Oh, I am wearing the shirt given to me by our field officer team from Quebec. So we have a very close-knit, just a fantastic group of people that represent the CCFR in Quebec. They showed up with their shooting range. They have these CERT pistols and software that keep score. It's really cool. A little shooting range that you can use for pistol and rifle right there inside the show. Our Quebec guys brought all that stuff with them. They ran it and took it all home and they made team shirts for themselves and then gave me and Wilson one too. So thank you for our outstanding field officer team in Quebec for all of that. Really, really appreciate that. Lots of people stopped by the booths, including Terry Blackmore, an author, and he gave me a set of his books. I'm just going to give Terry a shout out now. I haven't read them, so I don't know what they're like, but I will read them actually. So I just want to thank Terry. This is his book series. There's three of them. He gave me one of all three and then wrote something inside them for me, which I really appreciate. So thank you, Terry, for that. And good luck on the book sales. They got on television and on the podcast. So hopefully that helps a little bit. I appreciate that. Okay. So this is the last thing I got to cover with you. So in the last episode, I talked about a video from Christian Freeland that I wanted to play. But I didn't have time in the last episode. So I'm making time in this one. I mean, I've been going for 7 minutes or whatever, right? So I'm going to play this for you, but the setup to it, just so I was able to condense it down a little bit to, in interest of, just out of respect for your time. But the setup is, there's a reporter and he goes on and on and on for about 2 minutes listing all of the terrible things going on in Canada when it comes to violent crime and chaos and bail problems and gun crime, gun violence, all this stuff, and putting it to Christian Freeland, like, hey, what is it you guys are going to do about this? Like, you said it was going to get better, and it's worse than it ever has been in basically recorded history of the country. What's going on? And this is Chrystia Freeland's response. Check it out.
Is the federal government aware of the impact of the violent crime and gun crimes are having on communities, and what will be done about it?
Thanks for the question. Look, violent crime and gun crime are totally intolerable, are totally unacceptable. And very often, it is the most vulnerable among us who are the targets of this crime and whose lives are made really miserable, really scary by the prevalence of this crime. And it is absolutely incumbent on all orders of government to be working together to end violent crime. I do want to highlight, because you've spoken about gun crime, that, you know, one of the things that makes gun crime possible is guns on the streets. And that is why our government is acting so decisively to get guns off the streets in Canada. That's why we have banned military-style assault weapons. Why should people have them? They should not. These make our lives more dangerous. That's why our government has introduced a freeze on handguns. These are policies that make Canadians safe, that make Canadian families safe, that make women and girls and children safe. That is why our government is committed to them. And I do want to point out, the Conservatives have voted against those really obvious elementary measures that we need to make us safer.
Well, it's hard to know where to start with that clip, but I found it shocking, even though we see so many clips like it. And I'm just going to start with Chrystia Freeland. You know, this is somebody that has so much experience being a politician, being a cabinet minister, you know, experience in front of the camera, media training, you name it. She was from the stinking media, for God's sakes. And yet she comes across as airheaded and wildly incompetent, completely tone deaf, and at the same time, absolutely demeaning. You know, just like, I'm going to tell you some complete lies, demonstrable lies, and you're just going to eat it up, and I'm going to talk to you like you're a four-year-old, right? Chastising you, almost. Muffin, I know that firearm-related violence is scary and makes you miserable. Like, I know that a lot of people that support the Liberals, especially now, not even that supported them back in 2015, but support them now, are toddler-like, they're childlike in their minds and their behavior. And that happens, don't get me wrong, happens across the political spectrum, but it seems like a lot more with the Liberals. And I think it's almost like the Liberals know that that kind of messaging works for their base. But anyway, I just found it was just shocking. And then, of course, she's talking about their policies on firearm-related violence, that their policies make families safe and women safe and vulnerable citizens safe and all, making Canadians safe. Nothing could be further from the truth. Like, the truth is, you don't have to listen to gun lobby spin. You don't have to listen to, you know, things being twisted around or disinformation or whatever. Just look around, man. For the last 6 years, Bill C-71, 2020 gun ban, handgun ban, Bill C-21, attempted amendments, regulatory changes, mainstream media rhetoric, government rhetoric, slander against licensed gun owners. After all that, think of it from the perspective of the 2020 gun ban. That was 4.5 years ago, man. 4.5 years ago. And Canada is more dangerous and there's more firearm-related violence than in the history of record-keeping at Stats Canada. So I think somewhere around the 1972 or something. Never been more dangerous ever. Yeah. Well, guess what? Chrystia Freeland and the rest of them and the anti-gunners and all these the doctors, all these weirdos, you were wrong. I don't know if you just can't believe your lying eyes or what. You know, oh, the evidence is clear. The evidence is clear and overwhelming. You know, believe the science, all that crap. Canada's never been more dangerous. And any serious expert, including the gun lobby, we have experts of our own too, by the way. And just any serious, thoughtful expert told the government all through the process of C-71, C-21, the gun ban, all these things, told the media, this is not going to do anything. and it's probably going to make Canada worse off. It's going to be more dangerous. This is a bad distraction and a waste of money and a waste of, you know, creating division in the country for no good reason. Nope. That's gun lobby talking points. Well, guess what? 4.5 years later, more people are dying from firearm-related violence than ever before. More bullets are flying in downtown cores and shopping centers and wherever than ever before. Great work, you people. You did it. So anyway, it's just shocking how Freeland continues to just gaslight. Our policies make Canadians safe and women safe. Like, man, that couldn't be more. That's 180 degrees from the truth. So it's just very shocking that our politics in Canada are at this place where it's just like, you know what? All truth, anything objectively true that anyone can see with their own eyes, just forget it. Just ignore it and deny it. And you still have some core of the Canadian public. And I think these are people that are broken. They're broken with the state of politics. It has broken them psychologically. And they're broken from COVID. And they're broken from a lot of things. And people are just like, yeah, those policies. Who needs an assault weapon anyway? They just make our lives less safe. Like, just even when they're staring at the evidence, it's pretty wild. Anyway, resist that, people. Think for yourself. Is what someone telling you true? And that doesn't even just apply to the liberals. Anybody on the political spectrum. Is that true? That should be the first question to pop in your head. Did those policies make anybody safer? No, it actually probably killed a lot of people. You know, and no policy is perfect. Don't get me wrong. There's no policy that's going to save everybody. That's just the world we live in. It's a physical reality. But anyway, I just want to share that with you because I'm still shocked by it. All right, let's get Wilson on, and we have a lot of stuff to cover with her, so make sure that you stick with us. All right, via Skype, we've got Tracy Wilson of the CCFR. Wilson!
There it is. You know, just getting off the TACOM train, I've heard a lot lately, for 3 days straight, actually.
Yeah, well, it caught on a long time ago. I don't know why. And now I don't think people will tolerate us not doing it.
No, like, you have to just keep doing it, whether you like it or not. I like it. I know you don't, but too bad. Well, just do it.
I'll live through it. I can see that you're wearing your special shirt given to you by the CCFR Quebec team field officers, and I've got mine on as well.
Yeah, that's right. So they were outfitted in these cool team shirts all weekend at TACOM. I've seen them before, and I guess we are now officially part of the team because we were gifted these shirts. Our names are on the back. Mine says Wilson. Wilson! So, yeah, I love it. It's great. Big thanks to them.
Yeah, it's awesome. Well, we're going to talk about the Quebec field officer team in a second. But I think the biggest topic that we want to talk about in this episode, which will spawn a bunch of other topics, so all in the context of TACOM 2024 that we attended in Mississauga, Ontario, just a couple of days ago from when I'm recording this.
Yeah, that's right. This was the big, you know, yearly event held at the International Center. Some people say it was a little smaller this year, but not as far as participation. I think Fred told me that they had bigger numbers than they had the previous year. So it was busy.
Yeah, it was really great. And there's a lot of stuff to talk about. So we'll get started right away. One is that it was great, you know, and you know, you're expecting after all the pressure that we've been put on under as a community, all the gun bans, all the rhetoric, all the slander, all the rest of that stuff, that the show would be non-existent, especially because it got off to this crazy start. Mm-hmm. And then you had the pandemic, which was the first hit. And then right on the heels of that was the 2020 gun ban and then all the subsequent stuff right after that. But it was really, I found it really encouraging because after everything that we've been through, it just told me, like, we are still here. People are still going there. They're still supporting it. Lots of vendors still. Lots of attendees. People's mood was great. You know, everybody was happy just to be together. It was really cool.
Yeah, well, I actually made a tweet and a post about this, is I don't even consider TACOM just a gun show. It's like a celebration of our community and how resilient we are, the retailers, the gun owners, everybody coming together under one roof and just having an all-out awesome time for 3 days straight. And it sort of shows, like, you know, despite all the gun bans and gun bills and everything else done to our community, it's not a hunting show or an outdoor show. It's a tactical and competitive shooting show. And there we were, just packed solid for 3 days. So, yeah, it's not a gun show. It's a celebration.
Yeah. And I mean, there was some hunting stuff there, too. So it was pretty much for everybody.
Yes, absolutely.
Now, the first thing I want to do when we talk about TACOM is I want to thank all the field officers for coming and working the CCFR booth. And, you know, we do Field Officer of the Month. I'm going to do one in the outro for August 2024. I'm always inspired by all of these people that take time out of their own busy lives. And, you know, they're not kids. They have responsibilities and families and everything, who take the time out to come and work the booth and try to push the CCFR forward. We're not going to name everybody because there were so many people. And God help us if we name a whole group of people and we leave one person out or two people out, we'll be roasted alive.
I would just feel horrible too.
Yeah, of course, right? And the other thing too, a special shout out to the Quebec team, because the Quebec team, a whole contingent of our field officers from Quebec came with their team shirts, which they gave each of us one, which was just awesome. And they brought their shooting range set up. Just one more kind of a description of what that is.
Yeah, it's just like laser shooting range that you can do inside. It was free to everybody to play. So, you know, a huge attraction for the show itself. But it's pretty challenging. And there's handguns, like there's cert pistols. And they also had the chassis that they could put them in so you can shoot with a rifle. It's very competitive. It makes sound. You can hear the shots going. You hear the sound of brass dropping, even though it's not actually happening. But it's a lot of fun. And there was a lineup for that. There was a bigger lineup to go shoot that than there was to get in the booth and say hi to us and buy swag. So, yeah, it was really special having them there. And also a huge shout out to Greg Weiss. I know we said we wouldn't name everybody, but Greg is sort of our lead guy on this event. And he, you know, drags all the stuff there, is in charge of arranging all the volunteer help, setting up the booth. And it's a professional looking job. Like, this guy does an amazing job. So big thanks to him. But yeah, it was really, really special having the Quebec team there with this range, and a huge, huge contribution to the show overall.
Yeah. And one more thing about the shooting range, the Quebec team, I think, have they agreed to bring that to TSS already?
Yeah, like I've been trying to bribe them and stuff, and I think they're all in. TSS, as you know, is probably the biggest show in the country. I think last year it was 5 of those halls, so significant. And I can't see how that wouldn't be a blast. The show's agreed to give us the space. And yeah, so yeah, I would love it if they'd come. I know there was just some concern about conflicting shows in the Quebec region, but looking at the schedule, I think it's going to work out perfect. So really, really looking forward to it.
Yeah, it'd be great to have them back. Now, let's move on to, wait a second, stand by. Okay. So you and I did a couple of talks, and I think we did one each that was just us, and then we did an Ask Me Anything. And it's kind of through the speeches that we gave that there's actually some more things to talk about concerning our community, like what's going on right now. So the talk that I did, yeah, I think I spoke on the Saturday, and it was a speech about all the reasons why you should be optimistic as a gun owner, why things are turning around. And I think that talk was really well received, because we need a little bit of positive encouragement. And it's, you know, I'm not trying to give people false hope. There are compelling reasons to be optimistic. So I would say probably the biggest one is that the Liberals and their crazy majority government, or minority government, majority with the NDP, they're running out of time. We've gotten to the point where they haven't even executed the retail buyback, much less the buyback for everyone else, and they have 14 months at the latest left in their government. And so, you know, it's not 100% chance that it'll never happen, but it's looking very likely that the buyback will not happen at all, which leaves all of our firearms still in our hands. That's pretty exciting, right?
Yeah, that's really important. And you're right about that. They have willing participants with the business portion of the buyback program. These are retailers stuck with unsellable inventory, a more than willing business lobby group that was willing to help them, in fact, being paid by contract to do so. And yet still here we are, you know, 4.5 years later, nothing has happened. So in order to get all that done, learn some lessons from it and roll that out on a national level for individual gun owners. Excuse me, I've said it since the beginning. It's virtually impossible. And I still believe that. So yeah, there's a lot of reasons to be optimistic. Yep.
Yeah. Well, and I'm thinking back while you're talking, I'm like, yeah, what were those reasons? But certainly the buyback is highly unlikely to ever happen. And they're going to lose their mandate, which is great. I think I might have said a few things maybe that were a little too sharp about how easy it would be to do a retailer buyback, and they couldn't even accomplish that. I try to keep it pretty mild, but sometimes even I get too frustrated. And I say the quiet part out loud. But there are more PAL holders today than ever in the history of the PAL program. Mm-hmm. The shooting sports, there's still tons of shooting sports going on. There's still clubs across the country that are busy with all these things. They haven't eliminated that. And then I had translated that to look around. Look at how busy TACCOM is, despite everything we've been through. And so that, among a few other things, were I think really compelling reasons for us to look back at ourselves and our community and say, you know what? We outlasted them. We weathered the storm. We stuck together. We kept going. We found new ways to do our shooting sports. We found new ways to grow them. There's still waiting lists at clubs, waiting lists for the Canadian Firearm Safety Course across the country. Like we've been a pretty resilient community, and I think we should be proud of that. Yeah. and hopeful.
Yeah, and there's new guns coming out on the market. There's a couple of them premiered right at the show. Like, there are more people joining the sport now than ever. And in fact, overall, Canadians have never been more armed, so to speak. We've never owned as many guns in history as we do now. So, you know, for all the beating up that we've taken, I'm not trying to minimize what's happened, because Lord knows it's been a hell of a battle. But at the same time, we still got all our stuff. And there is every reason to believe that the tide is changing and there is light at the end of the tunnel. So I refuse to let these people get me down. And we will outwork them, we will outlast them, and we'll win.
Yep, we're still standing is one of the things I, you know, look around, we're still standing despite it all. All right, now you did a talk, and I think I'm not sure if the title, if this is accurate, but I think it was called Jagmeet Pulls Out.
Yeah, that's correct. So, I don't know. I thought it was funny, but I don't know. It was a little bit of a dry laugh when I said it. But yeah, as you know, there's been a supply and confidence agreement in place, propping up the Liberals for the last 2.5 years. It was supposed to go until June of next year. And under pressure from the Conservatives and everybody else, probably his own caucus with some by-elections, Jagmeet Singh has pulled out. So what does that mean? People are asking, do we go to an election? Well, not automatically. A lot of it, of course, is a public relations stunt or theater. You know, he can pull out of the agreement, but still vote to prop up the government. But even since that was announced, and I spoke about it at TACCOM, there's been a new development to that. And that, of course, is Yves-François Blanchet, leader of the Bloc Québécois Separatist Party, has said, hey, Trudeau, maybe I'll make some deals with you. So they're looking at the possibility of a new supply and confidence agreement with the Bloc, which I think is going to go over like, you know, a sinking ship. Because at this point, I think it's pretty clear that nobody has the mandate of the majority of Canadians. It's time for an election. So, you know, I do think Singh will still vote in line with the Liberals probably until the spring. The budget is due to be released in April, which of course is a forced confidence vote. I think even though Pierre will probably table one this fall just to use as banter against Jagmeet, I think we'll have to wait until the spring with the RIP period. Maybe we'll have a new prime minister by mid-June. That's kind of the timeline that I'm looking at. But yeah, the end is near, but there's all kinds of shenanigans going on, and the House has not even resumed yet for another week.
Well, and a lot of people are concerned. They're angry at this move by the Bloc, who, you know, they're a provential party. They're trying to get something federally. And of course, they're sitting there in the position going like, well, now that Jagmeet's out of the way, we can try to hold the rest of Canada hostage to get what we want, or we'll deny them an election, to remove apparently the most unpopular prime minister in the history of the country by far. So I don't know that that's going to help relations, you know, the national unity. No. But I don't know. It's just, what a mess. But anyway.
Yeah. It caused a lot of division between East and West, and that's the last thing we need right now. So.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't want to discuss that too much, just because it starts to get complicated, and there's a lot of moving parts there. But I think there's also the thought, the consensus that Jagmeet Singh is not going to do anything to jeopardize his pension, which apparently vests sometime, I think it's around February 25th or something like that. So for him to, you know, willingly trigger an election or participate in a confidence vote, I don't think he'll do it before March, the beginning of March. And you know, if you think about it in terms of just general morality, you know, there's a guy that will probably sit back and watch the country burn for the next 6 months rather than jeopardize the pension that he believes he's entitled to.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's why I'm, you know, targeting that April budget vote, is he'll be securing his pension then. He'll, you know, brag about all the things that he did get accomplished through the agreement. And he's hoping that he'll get a little good favor back from voters from ending his relationship with the Liberals, because of course it's hard to hold them to account or put down the Liberals when you're indistinguishable. So yeah, it's just a funny time in politics, and I don't mean funny haha. So
yeah it's quite a mess. And it is, and I have to admit though that it is funny. And we talked a lot about Jagmeet Singh, obviously at TACOM. Everybody's you know, up to date on all the politics. They're like, what does this mean? We're going to an election? What does that mean? It's like, no. And I said, you know, it's got to be really difficult. One of the worst things in the world would be to be Jagmeet Singh right now, because he's one of the, if there's a top five list of people that have absolutely no credibility attached to them as a human being in Canada, like Jagmeet Singh's probably at the top. He's just nothing, just crap talking. His words are completely meaningless. Everybody knows why he's hanging in there with the Liberals, and it's for self-serving reasons. And it's just, that's got to be so difficult for him to talk around. But he's like, oh, you know, I'm this. Oh, yeah, that's right. This is what I remembered that I wanted to share. And I don't know if we talked about it, but I saw a clip of him saying, like, you know, that's not the case at all. You know, I'm gonna win my riding. I have a clear, going towards a clear victory in my riding in the next election. It's like, actually, no, man, if you look at the polling, you're gonna lose. So he lies in order to bolster his credibility, but everybody knows he's lying, which further erodes his credibility. What a mess, Matt, what a mess.
Oh, he's put himself in an impossible situation, because if he does vote alongside a confidence vote to take down the government, you know, beforehand, like this fall, he's not ready for an election and he's going to lose. So he loses his job. If he waits and does it in the spring, he may still lose his job, but he'll gain his pension. But everyone will know that's exactly why he did it, right? So he's put himself in the most impossible of situations. And yeah, it looks really good on him.
Yeah, times are tough for the Rolex Robin Hood. Okay. Now, another thing that we always get asked about, you know, are the conservatives going to do anything for us? And like in my talk, I'm going to make this quick just so we can move on to a more important issue, is that if you look at the political landscape right now, the conservatives have said clear, and this actually ties in with our next topic, said clear in full view of the media a myriad of times, I don't know, probably dozens of times, the conservatives have promised to repeal everything that Justin Trudeau has done on guns. So it's in the platform, it's been out in the public, and at the same time, they've been polling between 209 and 240 seats for a year. So
Yeah, that's right.
For the Polyev, so it's not damaged them. So for Polyev to not do what he promised to do, there's no upside to not doing it, right? This is not an Aaron O'Toole era, you know, where we know what happened there. This, for him to not do it, will only erode support. So it's not going to create less support for him, you know, from centrists or leftists, which aren't going to vote for him anyway, just common sense centrists, and it will erode the support he already has. So there's no political, I guess all this to say, there's no political advantage for them not to do it. And the political advantage and staying in power is typically, I'm not saying this is the only thing for the conservatives, because I'd like to think that it isn't, but typically for politicians, that's the only thing that really talks, speaks to them. That's what they're truly worried about above all else. So I really believe that that's going to happen. Now, the last question is, everyone is worried about the Senate, because there's been Justin Trudeau is running around with his hair on fire, appointing every lunatic off the street that's not in the drunk tank. And has some kind of long donation record of the liberals, like giving them Senate positions for life. And that's got a lot of people worried. So tell us a little bit about what the Senate situation is and how it probably won't affect the conservatives' ability to bring forward legislation that'll set things right, I guess you could say.
Yeah, so that's right. Trudeau often brags about making the Senate more independent. Excuse me, he abolished the liberal senators and said we should only have independent senators. And in a perfect world, that would work out. Unfortunately, Trudeau's idea of independent senators are the most wild, far-left activist senators you can find, you know, huge donors to the Liberal Party. The last couple of appointments are a slap in the face. It's like he's not even trying to hide it. It's a complete mockery. And you would think anybody who's on the ISG, who's on the independent Senate group, who literally would like to try and be independent, would see it for what it is and call it out. But that's, you know, yet to be seen. So these last couple of appointments are a complete joke. And gun owners are justifiably so concerned, you know, with Trudeau just totally stacking the Senate. Is it even possible to do the things he wants to do? Because, of course, the Senate's part of the legislative process. And the answer is yes. So the Senate is there as an unelected, and therefore, you know, the idea is they don't answer to voters. They don't have to do what their voters want in order to win again. They can do what's right, which aren't always the same thing. They should be, but they're not. That's how it's supposed to work. They're supposed to be the chamber of sober second thought. They're supposed to make suggestions. Sometimes they make amendment suggestions to legislation that might make it better. They are not there to block legislation. In fact, it's only happened, I think, six times since the 60s that they blocked legislation, and it was nothing remotely even close to this. So it's a very rare occurrence. I don't think that would happen at this time. In fact, if Polyev puts these things that he wants to do, including, you know, the possible rewrite of a Firearms Act or whatever, whatever it is he wants to do, if he lays that out clearly in his election platform, the Senate would defer to the CPC majority to carry out their mandate, because that is the will of Canadians. So, you know, it would be a huge erosion of the entire institution for the Senate to try and play games. Will they be a little bit obstructionist and delay things? Probably. Yeah, that's probably going to happen, and it happens now. But to absolutely reject House of Commons legislation, unheard of. So, it is a concern, because it will make things, of course, more difficult. At the same time, the Liberals have made it very mainstream to govern by use of OIC, something that was usually reserved just for implementing the measures of legislation. And now it basically has taken the place of. So, yeah, it should be a very, very interesting legislative term. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, well, one of the things that that I'd been mentioning to people that were asking those questions too is it's the purpose of the Senate is to evaluate bills independently of the House from a different perspective, a perspective where they don't have to worry about voters, and then suggest amendments, basically, right? So the purpose of the Senate isn't to block the will of a, you know, an elected government. That's not the purpose. And if they were to do that, start behaving in that way, number one, I don't think it's going to help Canadians have any respect for the Senate, right? Because Canadians have been in a mood to abolish the Senate numerous times, so has Parliament. And their role is not to undermine or block democracy, right? It's funny because you have people on the left all the time. This is a threat to democracy. I mean, it's, and you're Hitler, by the way. And, you know, like this is the language of the left all the time, like constantly. They go to these things. You know, you're going to destroy our democracy. And it's like, well, the Senate really has a choice. And specifically the independent senators group has a choice. Are you going to be the ones that are going to undermine or exist as a threat to Canadian democracy? That's really the question. And if they choose to do that, they're going to have a lot of trouble with us. They're going to have a lot of trouble with other groups around the country. They're going to have trouble with the elected government, the elected clear majority government. They're going to have a lot of trouble. They might get themselves abolished by fooling. It might be a FAFO moment for them, right?
Yeah, well, and the thing is, like, if you have a conservative majority, even a supermajority, it's a clear mandate from the people of Canada. And the Senate is in no position, and it's not their job to go against that. I can't even imagine what that would look like, but it would be a clear reason for Senate reform, which people have been calling for a long time. So I don't think they would go down that road, but if they do, they do it at their own peril.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's move on. But hopefully we've really provided some good explanations about how stuff is supposed to work and how it most likely will work when the time comes. All right, a little bit of good news, and it's interesting news here. I was looking at one of my favorite accounts, the Gun Muppet, TGM, on Twitter, now X. I still want to call it Twitter because it's kind of old school. And that alerted us to what happened here. Let me just pull this up. So after the shooting on the Danforth in 2018, Ken Price of the Danforth Families for Safer Communities, I think that's what they're called. Don't quote me on that.
I think so.
They decided that he led the charge to come up with a class action lawsuit or a lawsuit against Smith & Wesson, the manufacturer of the firearm, of the handgun that was stolen, made its way through the gang system illicitly in Canada and ended up in the hands of a basically a would-be terrorist. And
yes,
they thought, well, this is clearly the fault of Smith & Wesson. And, you know, they should have implemented like a fingerprint reader on the side of the gun or biometrics or whatever to stop unauthorized use. Like just inane, crazy stuff. But just a reason to try to, you know, spread some misery and hurt people. And anyway,
yeah, and I think they sued for $150 million.
Too. Yeah, of course, yeah. And something so ridiculously ridiculous, right? I don't know, whatever, man. And this is why it's so difficult to talk to anti-gun groups, because they seem to, there's the common thread through all of them, they're completely irrational. Just irrational, yeah. Like incapable, entirely incapable of just sitting down with stakeholders on all sides and be like, okay, you know what? I think we all really want the same thing. Why don't we talk this out? It's like, you're pro-murder. I was like, okay, so I don't think that's going to happen. Anyway,
yeah,
so
Jim Thurley wrote a whole story on the on this. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm just going to read the title of this. It's a blog. It's called Bennett Jones. I think it's bennettjones.com or something.
Yes.
But here's the title: Certification Denied in Proposed Class Action or proposed class proceeding against gun manufacturer for mass shooting. Now that's interesting. And this was actually back in the middle of March. I'm just going to read just this one quote from the judge. Justice Perel held that a design negligence case ultimately requires evidence from an expert in design. The plaintiffs provided no evidence that an M&P 40 designed with authorized user technologies would be reliable, economically feasible, or even safer. So they couldn't even get, so this is the important point. Not only for this frivolous, ridiculous, vexatious lawsuit, they couldn't even get certification to go to court. You know, the anti-gunners were, you know, hopping up and down, oh, look, the CCFR and everybody else lost. And it's like, well, number one, We lost the first case. We're appealing, and don't count us out yet because we have a good chance of winning that, at least in my opinion and our legal team's opinion and the legal teams of four other parties. But that's how far we got. And the anti-gunners couldn't even get certified to step foot in the courtroom. So I find that quite interesting.
Yeah, well, it is interesting. And I think for, you know, all intents and purposes, it shows that when I look at stuff like this, if there's a madman out there who is, you know, going to commit a crime or has committed a heinous crime, I think the blame for that should rest solely on his shoulders, not on the shoulders of the gun that was sourced through illegal activities, through gangs and stolen. And like, to me, it sort of alleviates some of the blame that should be resting on the shoulders of the madman. So, yeah, I would have set a terrible precedent. So I'm glad that it failed. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, it's so ridiculous on its face. It'd be like, it's okay that that I drive my truck around, and if I got into an accident and somebody died, you know, apparently that's fine. I'll get sued. My insurance will get. I'll have a claim against my insurance. You know, I might be sued. The insurance company may be sued. But if somebody steals my truck, the people involved are going to sue Toyota.
Yeah. Like, well, I mean, you know, and that's what you said it best when you said that they're just acting unreasonably. And I'm not trying to take away from what happened, and it would be horrific for any family to go through, but focus your efforts on holding criminals to account and measures that are credible for prevention, right? This is not it. So just a mess.
Yeah. Well, and you know, it's funny. It's like everyone on that side seems to want to attach. Anytime you disagree with us, you're somehow saying something supportive of what happened to our families or whatever. It's just so unreasonable, yeah. and it destroys any possibility of dialogue. Of course, disagreeing with someone who's acting completely irrationally and unreasonably has nothing to do with anything they've been through, you know? Again, this is a tactic that they use, and it's really just unconscionable. They tend to be an incorrigible group of people that just... It's frustrating because I think that there's things in Canada that need to be discussed, and we have problems that we all need to solve together. And they just make sure that we can never get the sides together to have that conversation. But anyway, all right.
Yeah.
We got our list done.
We did it.
Yeah. All right. Well, we have more to talk about that's less time sensitive. We're actually gonna push that to the next podcast because we've been at it for a while already. Thanks for the update, and I guess we will see you in the next one.
All right, we'll see you then.
All right, that's gonna do it for episode 173 of the CCR Radio Podcast. Thanks everyone for watching. Make sure that you share the podcast, get other people involved. I only have one thing I need to share with you before I let you go, and that is Field Officer of the Month for August 2024, and it is our great friend Luc Lapine from Quebec. Thank you, Luc, for all of your work. Really appreciate it. Thanks to the whole Quebec team, but this is your month, Luc. Really appreciate all the work. Can't tell you how much. And so in case you've forgotten, what you get for being Field Officer of the Month is a year's free subscription from Canadian Access to Firearms, CATF. So thank you, Donovan Dewis, our great friend from CATF, for providing that every month for one of our people. Really, really generous. So I can't tell you how much we appreciate that. And of course, a $100 promo code from the CCFR online store, and you get your picture published in the CATF. Donovan has been doing that lately. And of course, you get mentioned on the podcast and our nationally broadcast television show on Wild TV called CCFR Radio on the Air. So that's what I've got for you for now. If you want to become a member of the CCFR and you aren't right now, you can do that at firearmrights.ca or ccfr.ca. If you're already helping us, thank you so much for that. Take care, everyone. And I will see you in the next one.
This is another episode of the CCFR Radio Podcast. Remember, if you don't stand up for your own ability to own and use firearms, who will? Join the CCFR or donate right now at www.firearmrights.ca.